Livewire with Paul Turner.
On Livewire today, I'd like to introduce to you Beverly Craven. There's a name from the past. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
All right, thank you. How are you doing?
Yes, not too bad at all. Thanks very much. Name from the past, yeah. It struck me the other day that Promise Me is like almost 25 years old, which makes me feel a bit ancient.
It's funny because any time anyone says Beverly Craven, the first thing that comes into my head is "You light up another cigarette." It's always that line, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny actually how people still remember my name. I had a glazier around the other day putting some glass in my front door, and that was quite funny. He wanted his picture taken with me and everything. So,
wow!
How can you remember me after all this time?
Well, it's funny.
There we go. Can't complain.
Promise Me, obviously, was your first global hit. How did that one actually come about?
Well, how did I write it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I can actually remember, almost like it was yesterday, sitting in my bedsit in southeast London. And I just started the intro. And I thought, oh, that sounds a bit Elton John. And then just kind of wrote it. Chronologically, if you like, you know, from start to finish. I mean, sometimes you get a chorus or you get a verse or something like that, and then you kind of build a song around that idea. But this thing just kind of ran from start to finish, and took me about a day and a half to write it. It's about nobody in particular, and I just kind of thought, right, well, the melody's doing this, and it's that sort of shape, and then it needs to do that, and so it was. You know, it certainly wasn't a song that I thought this is going to be a hit, you know, which shows how much I know. Absolutely nothing.
Well, there we are. I must admit, I thought there was a story behind it of there must be somebody it was about and all that.
No, there's a story behind most of my songs, but not that one. It's probably a sort of, you know, a mix of, a few different people all thrown into one, because I think sometimes when I sit down and play, it's more of a subconscious thing. So yeah, I suppose it comes from somewhere.
That's brilliant. So you had a string of hits and sell-out tours and Brit Awards
That's what it says in my press bio, right? Yes. I did work very, very hard. In fact, I was signed to Epic Records for 11 years, and during that time they said I was one of the hardest working acts on the label, and it was a slog, especially, you know, that first album. You know, I just seemed to spend all the time kind of promoting it in Europe, and then went to America as well, although things didn't take off for me there because I fell pregnant with my eldest daughter, who's now 23, almost 23, she's just coming up to 23. It was pretty full on, really.
How many albums do you reckon you've sold?
Oh, blimey. I don't know. I mean, the first one sold the most, and I think that's probably somewhere around 2 million, I would guess. And then the second one didn't do too badly. Third one completely flopped. But that was in 2000. I wasn't really behind that album. I didn't really feel it at the time. It's difficult to say, really, because, I mean, now I think for a lot of artists it's about going out live rather than being signed to a label and sort of selling units and being in the charts. You know, I think with the internet and everything, it's opened it up hugely for everyone. And in some ways that's not so good, in other ways it's great. You know, fortunately for me, I enjoy playing live, and I've got some great musicians, so going out and doing gigs is the perfect way for somebody like me to kind of still maintain a career in the music business, because no one's going to sign me at 51. It's a youth culture, isn't it? So, but, you know, it's a nice evening out, you know, puts food in the fridge. So, yes, I still enjoy it, and it's certainly not what it was in the old days. You know, being signed to a major corporation like Sony, you know, has its downsides because it's a bit like selling your soul in many respects. Certainly, I lost my enthusiasm for writing. So it's lovely now that I can do things on a much smaller scale and play more intimate venues and be really connected with the audience, because it is very personal for me. My songs are very personal. It's almost therapy for me, actually, really. So, yeah, so I like where I'm at the moment. I much prefer just being, you know, just going out and doing my little shows every so often, rather than, you know, being under that pressure of making albums and going out and promoting. I think that really does, it's not conducive at all to being creative.
It's certainly all different now because of the internet. Little Birdie tells me you sold 3 million albums, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh, that's good. Oh, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a respectable amount.
How did you cope with the pressures of the music industry at the height of your career?
I didn't really. I didn't cope very well at all, because I was popping out babies at the same time. It wasn't good timing, really. yeah, it was tricky, because when you're constantly out promoting and touring, there just isn't time to write, and that's what I always wanted to be, was a writer. So it was quite frustrating. I didn't enjoy it at all, to be honest. But looking back on it now, it was a lot of hard work. And you know, if I hadn't have done it, and if I hadn't have been signed to a large, you know, major label like Epic, then, you know, who knows? I don't know what would have happened. But it's afforded me all sorts of freedom now, you know, and I can go out and do gigs based on the fact that I had a hit, you know, nearly 25 years ago, which is a great position to be in. But would I do it again? I don't know. I just like being quite insular and hiding myself away with, you know, my piano and my dog, and I like sort of isolation, and so going out and plugging yourself like that I found it quite difficult.
Did the record company ever tell you what you should record, what you should put out on as a single, what should be the B-side, what tracks go on the album?
Yeah, I mean, they had their input. I mean, I had a wonderful A&R man called Muff Winwood, who's Stevie Winwood's brother. And he was responsible for Desiree, Jamiroquai, Sade. He's, you know, very, very well respected A&R man in the music business. He's retired now, long since retired. And I was very lucky to land him as my A&R man. and I remember when I'd finished recording the album, and I went in to see him, and he said, "Well, you know, what track do you think should be the first single?" And I said, "I haven't got a clue, Muff. I don't think any of them sound like singles." And he said, "Well, in that case, we're going to release Promise Me." And I thought, "Oh, fantastic. That's my career in ruins before I'd even got off the ground, you know." But they were clearly right about that, because it did go on to be, you know, it got to number 3 in the end in the UK chart, and actually it did really well in Europe as well. So, and it's still played now, which never ceases to amaze me. So, and I'm very grateful for that. So, yeah, so then after that, I kind of said to Muff, "Well, look, you've obviously got a nose for these things. I'm not going to choose any of them." And, you know, it's very difficult when you've written the song to actually be objective about it. And I always have to ask for everyone else's opinion. You know, my mum, my friends, my dog. I can't really judge.
Recently, you performed at Champney's annual breast cancer fundraising luncheon. How did that go, and how did that come about?
Yeah, well, I used to work at Champney's. I was a waitress there. and a chambermaid as well, because Champneys is just down the road. Well, it was about a mile down the road from where I used to live when I was a kid. So, you know, I used to jump on my little moped and pop off to work there when I left school. So, and then I met this journalist a few years ago, and he was friends with the owner of Champneys. And he said, we were doing an interview, and he said, oh, you used to work at Champneys. I know the owner. And so he kind of talked to him, and the next thing I know is that Stephen Purdue, who owns Champneys, has given me membership. So I just pop along there and have a swim or use the gym or something like that, have a quick jacuzzi and a steam, which is a lovely thing to have. I really appreciate it, actually. So I'll go and do, you know, ladies' luncheon for them, which is always lovely, and for a good cause. And then I get my membership, which is fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, your songwriting, would you say that's therapy to you or not?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I absolutely love it. And I'm often kind of tossing ideas around in my head, you know, just trying to work things through myself, you know, life issues and stuff like that. And I think, I might make a good song. So it makes you think about things more deeply, I think, just because if you want to write something about it, then you've got to really get to the nub of it and explore an idea. So, yeah, in that way, it is quite therapeutic.
Can you tell us about your new album?
Ah, well, the new album is, yeah, it's pretty hot off the press, really. I only finished it in the summer. Produced it myself. I had a lot of help, though, from this guy called Gary Stevenson, who engineered it. He did the mix as well. He's just such a great mix engineer. He makes it all sound like a record. He mixes all of Go West stuff as well. Do you remember Go West?
We close our eyes.
Yeah, that's the one. So he does all of their stuff too. He does loads of different artists. But, yeah, he's a fabulous mix engineer. And, yeah, it's, you know, it's not a huge departure from my other albums. I'm playing a lot of these songs off the new album live, actually, because I really like playing them. I'm pretty happy with it, really.
Where can people contact you on social media?
Oh, I don't really. I did, you know, I had a Facebook for a little while, a private Facebook, and I didn't really know how to use it, to be honest. People kept saying, you know, I kept getting friend requests, and I'd be like, yeah, you know, and then I thought, well, I don't actually know what I'm doing on this. You're supposed to do stuff, aren't you? You're supposed to sort of check in regularly and sort of play along. But I just wasn't very good. It's just not really something that I want to do, to be honest. So I sort of shut that down. But there's this, I do have a Facebook which is more of a sort of business Facebook, if you know what I mean. Just sort of advertises gigs and stuff like that. And somebody else does that for me. So I don't really do the social media thing at all, actually. But I do have a website, which is quite cool. And that's got all my gigs listed on it, and it's got a little guest book so people can leave messages, which is always fun to read. Well, some of them are a bit kind of critical, but that's all right. I just take the piss out of them when I go, you know, when I do the next gig. So that's fine. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. Just plodding on, really.
What is the website address, in case anybody doesn't know it?
BeverlyCraven.com.
Well, that's nice and easy.
Yeah. Simple.
What do you hope for, or what plans do you have, say, for the next 5 years?
Oh, blimey. Well, it would be nice to have another album out within the next 5 years, but I am a very slow writer, and I have to sort of do it when the mood strikes. So, actually, I'm in the middle of decorating at the moment, because I've just moved house. And it's brilliant. I love it. I get so excited about the painters coming that I can't sleep the night before. And I'm looking at range cookers and kitchen cabinets and bathrooms and things like that, and flooring and underfloor heating, and I go on all these websites, you know, how to unblock a gutter. You know, I'm getting very sort of house proud, and it's brilliant. I love it.
Now we're on a new career for Beverly Crave and the Handy Woman.
Yes, DIY, absolutely. Yes. No, I love it. It's very empowering. I've got a toolbox and everything.
You'll be doing these TV shows next where you're doing other people's houses up.
Oh, blimey. No, doing my own is stressful enough. But, yeah, no, I absolutely love it. It keeps me busy.
Can't be bad. In a couple of minutes, we'll play Love High and we'll let you introduce it. How did that song come about?
I have no idea. It just kind of, I don't know. It's not really... Well, I guess it was. There was this guy that I had a party, and he showed up, and I'd never really paid much attention to him, to be honest. And then when I saw him at the party, all of a sudden I thought, "Blimey, actually, you're quite nice, really, aren't you?" And so that was where the germ of the idea started.
Ah, so I guess it was the drink that made you have different opinions.
The drink, it could well have been, yes. Well, you know what it's like. No, I just sort of spotted him. He was chatting with a load of people on the other side of the room, and he was really smiling and laughing, and I just thought, oh, that's nice.
Well, I shall let you introduce that in just a sec, but I'd like to thank you for being on the show. And
well, thanks for having me on.
And hopefully everything goes well in your musical career and personal career, and also to your daughters as well.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say. Thank you so much. Lovely to speak to you.
Lovely to speak to you too. If you'd like to introduce Love High, we'll play that on the show next.
Okie dokie. Well, hi, this is Beverly Craven, and this song is called Love High.
Too.
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media.